Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. He's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Guys, after 18 months, I saw a play again at the Atlantic Theater Company. It was extraordinary. The play is called The Last of the Love Letters, written by and featuring Ngozi Anyanwu, directed by Patricia McGregor, and featuring Daniel J. Watts and Xavier Scott Evans. It was the most extraordinary piece of theater. Ngozi and Daniel are just tearing up the stage. They are shredding it. It was so powerful. It was so exciting to watch these people tell a story that we will all relate to, especially after the last 18 months. The thing at the center of this play is, do we stick it out or leave, right? That's always the question. In this play, two people contemplate the thing they love most and whether to stick it out or leave it behind. To stay or to go, that is the question. The last of the love letters is just that, a plea and a painful goodbye wrapped into one. When this play ended, we leapt to our feet cheering. Not just because it was such a remarkable thing to be in a theater again, safely masked, everyone had to be vaccinated to be greeted by the incredibly extraordinary Atlantic Theater Company staff, to sit in that beautiful old church that's been renovated and turned into just this beautiful theater in New York City. But truly, these performances are extraordinary. The play is so powerful, and I felt so lucky to be there, and so will you. And you can go see this play, which is a limited engagement until Sunday, September 26th, by going to atlantictheater.org for tickets and more information. And while you're there, check out the incredible season ahead, The Last of the Love Letters. It was a beautiful night in the theater. And now, without further ado, here's my conversation with the stars of The Last of the Love Letters, Ngozi and Daniel. Enjoy.
A-OK. A-OK.
Everybody, I have the unbelievable pleasure to have two extraordinary artists on the podcast today. They are part of a world premiere play at the Atlantic Theater Company in the greatest city in the world, New York City. It is called The Last of the Love Letters. It is written by an extraordinary artist, Ngozi Anyanwu, and she is also in this piece that was directed by Patricia McGregor, and it features one of the most beautiful talents that I've had the pleasure of now interviewing twice, Daniel J. Watts. Xavier Scott Evans is also in the play. Sadly, he couldn't join us this evening, but I just have to say, I saw your play during a hurricane.
Yes.
And,
oh wow.
In the rain.
Yes.
Yeah. And I feel like it made it all the more sort of immediate and sensorial and exciting. And so I highly recommend, if you can see this play during a hurricane, do it, but go even if you can't.
Right.
Hello to you both. Can you just say your names out loud for my listeners?
Sure. Hi, I'm Ngozi Anyanwu, and I am the playwright, and I'm an actor in the play as well.
And my name is Daniel J. Watts, and I am also an actor in the play.
Yeah, you are.
Hopefully.
So I'm going to read a description of this play, and you can tell me if you feel like it's accurate, and then just use it as a jumping off place to just talk about the genesis of this play, when you wrote it, how you wrote it, how the two of you decided to do this extraordinary dance together. So I'm gonna say a few words about it, and then it's all you. So this is the description. Two people contemplate the thing they love most and whether to stick it out or to leave it behind. To stay or to go, that is the question. The last of the love letters is just that, a plea and a painful goodbye wrapped into one. Playwright?
Sure. One, I hate writing synopses for my plays. So I just try and make it as close to or as vague as possible. So I'm like, I'll write a poem. That's what the play is about. But yeah, it's very much about two people talking about something that they love the most and their relationship to love and their relationship to art. And the inception for this play, I had worked, the prompt for this play was something I'd done with the 24-hour plays. Mark Armstrong had approached me about doing a monologue, and the first actor I was paired with was Pedro Pascal. And the way that that works is that they give you an actor, and the actor's kind of, and this was, you know, at the height of the quarantine. So, you know, Pedro was, you know, in his home in LA, and he's like, I'm in a garage, I have a Stephen Ali Girgis playbill, and I've never played insane, because they give you like a prop, a place, and then what you've never done. And it was Stephen Ali Girgis's Motherfucker with the Hat, and I was like, okay. And then 24 hours, make a monologue, go. So I kind of written this, you know, two pager about someone who was really lovesick and had remembered a play that they had seen with their lover, essentially. And he had done that. And I was sort of in the height of writing, not wanting to write. And then I just kind of kept on writing that one thing. He had done it. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And I just really just kept writing it. So like 2 o'clock in the morning fervors when I really was like, I don't want to write anymore. I'm like, well, I'll just keep writing this thing. So this piece is very much like a hodgepodge of different monologue projects that I was approached with all year during the quarantine, and was like, oh, maybe this is one thing. Maybe this is my sort of like, and I'm like, also like, who am I talking to? I don't know who I'm talking to. And for me, it was really about like wrestling with loneliness, because I was very much trapped in LA and just was up in bouts of depression and was just like, all right, I'm just purging. I don't know what this is, but it is a purging, and it's 25 pages and blouse, split out. It's done. maybe done. And I handed it to Neil, because we were workshopping other plays throughout the pandemic.
Neil Pepe, artistic director of the Atlantic Theater Company.
Yeah, and he was working on some other work of mine, and we were just doing readings and very casual workshops just through Zoom, and just reading plays. He was like, as long as you're here, you know, consider me a resource for anything that you want me to read. And I was like, well, I have this thing. I don't think it's anything. It's just kind of, I don't know what it is. Here you go. And he was like, we're going to do that. And I was like, oh, but I don't even know if this is what we're going to do it. So we'll see, we'll figure out what it is. And that's the part that Daniel had performed in. And then as we were getting closer to rehearsal, as we were getting closer to doing it in the season and committing more, he was like, you should write a companion piece with that, which is the piece that I perform in.
Okay. The two of you are two of the most prolific people during a quarantine. People who know Daniel J. Watts, not just from his extraordinary Tony-nominated performance in Tina, and when this airs, who knows if there will be a change to that sentence. his theater pieces, The Jam, are some of the most exciting work to come out of a human being in a very long time. And it is both of you, my YouTube relationship with both of you, watching previous work, Instagram, all the ways in which I can kind of see what the outpouring of art that has come from your two bodies and souls. I just want to start by saying, in case we run out of time, has sustained me deeply during this unbelievably tumultuous time. You know, we were talking in September of 2021. Yours was the first play I saw after an 18-month hiatus of being in a room with live performance. And it was, I just felt so lucky that was my introduction back into the world of art and theater and performance. It's so hard without giving, you know, it's always, I don't want to give away this play, right? I want people to go see this play because it's so unique. But I want to talk about how, because we were in a pandemic, how did the actual physical rehearsing, just quickly, guys, first, it's like two separate plays. These two actors are never on stage together. And yet we feel their relationship so strongly throughout, which is such a unique, I don't know, gift of this piece. But how did you rehearse this? And how did the two of you decide to do it together?
We were in separate rooms pretty much the entire process. Like, I was lucky enough to have the playwright every once in a while, but, you know, but she had her own play to learn. You know, so it was, you know, it would be either her and Patricia working and then me and someone in the other room going over lines, and then we'd swap, and that was pretty much how we were. We did a photo shoot with the
New Yorker.
With the New Yorker, like week two, and we were like, hi.
good to see you.
So you weren't rehearsing via Zoom. You were rehearsing in the Atlantic Theater space.
Yes. Yeah.
And yes. Was there testing involved? Was there a whole kind of regimen for health and safety?
Well, they had to make sure that we were all vaccinated. So we had to be vaccinated just to start rehearsal.
Okay.
And I was working on a film project. So I had been tested right before rehearsal.
Okay.
Anyway, and I know that Daniel was on vacation.
I was in Mexico, so I had to get tested just to come back. You know, I had to get tested when I got back.
Yeah.
You know? So everyone was super safe.
Yeah, and we were the only ones who weren't masked. So the performers were the only ones during rehearsal who didn't have to wear a mask, and everybody was masked during rehearsal.
So tell me this is a very deep piece, and there's kind of a, I don't want to call it a gimmick, but you feel like you think you know what this play is. And then at the end, you realize the love letter might not exactly be who you think the love letter was for, but maybe it is. Tell me what was the most fun about making this piece of theater.
Fun part is probably the now part. Honestly, to the doing it of, you know, the feeling somewhat in control of it, or it's having some semblance of a handle on it. It's, you know, it's, Ngozi is a beautiful writer, and it's very poetic as much as it is very, what's the word? It moves how your mental process moves. So everything isn't exactly linear, which is fun for me. That's fun for me, trying to bounce back and forth between emotions and thought patterns and maintaining it. But yeah, it's been a great exercise, if nothing else. It's been a great exercise in embodying emotions and personalities that sometimes are probably only inside your mind. Mm-hmm. Right. The beauty in this play is that as a Black man, to have the opportunity to show such a wide range of emotions and in one piece, is a true gift. So that's
thought you were going to say after the pandemic, it was an exercise. Can I still learn lines?
Right. Close. You know, it's true. I mean, that was a, when they first approached me, I read it. I said, wait. Wait.
Where's the
dia of the log? I see monologue. Where's the dia part?
Can we do it as a reading? I can definitely do it as a reading.
You're going to say all of this by yourself. Okay.
Well, how did you learn all of this by yourself? Well, did you sort of, each of you set up, what was the process for learning this? Did you kind of come to rehearsal already off book and try to do it that way?
Around the 2-3 week mark before rehearsal, I started reading the play every day. Mm-hmm. And I was writing 2 pages of it. So how I memorize other people's material is I write it down. So it feels like I wrote it. For 3 weeks leading up to the first day of rehearsal, every day I would write 2 pages. I would read the whole play, then I write 2 pages just so there was like feeling like it was coming out of me in some way or form. So that by the time we got to rehearsal, I was not unfamiliar with the words. I just found out either something had gotten cut or
or added,
you know. But I was, I knew better than to come in here cold, because that would have been foolish.
It would have been difficult.
Difficult.
And then for you too.
For me, my piece is much shorter. Because I'm smart.
She's smart.
Um, But it was just a lot of drilling. It was drill, drill, drill. Xavier, who also is the sort of orderly person in the play, is also my assistant. So we'd go off to the side, work on lines, really. And for us, it was really like, Patricia does this really great thing where she, at least for say rehearsal, she does like an actor's pass in rehearsal. So once we're through like maybe a week or two of, you know, a week or a few days of text work, then it's like, all right, once we're on our feet, she literally makes you do the play. So she's like, just go do the play. And so like, and then from then she starts over as far as blocking. So for me, I learned through blocking, like mm-hmm. I learned through intention and learned through blocking. And so the more I know what I'm doing, the more I know what this is, what's behind this, the more I can sort of memorize and what have you. So once we were on our feet, cause you can learn it, right? You can learn the script and then you got to do the script on stage.
Totally
then,
different.
Then it's like, I don't know the script cause I don't know why and how I'm saying things. And so once we had started to block, it was like, oh, this has to happen and what have you. And this is when this happens. And then, oh, and I'm saying it because of this. And so she really just kind of really, I mean, for lack of a better term, got in the ass of the script. And once you just really know everything that you're saying and doing and everything is motivated, your body just remembers mm-hmm. that. Yeah.
When she began working on this piece, obviously it's really interesting when the performer is also the writer, but not the director.
Right.
Did you feel like you had to sit on your hands sometimes, or did you feel like through her eyes, you learned a whole other kind of world about this play that you might not have known as the writer?
Yeah, I mean, I very much do I'm learning very much so now, but I very much do a hands-off approach. I'm like, I wrote it, I'm done, go act. And Patricia had directed the world premiere of my first play in LA. And so we just have a really sort of like trustworthy, you know, relationship. So when it's time for me to come back and be the playwright, I go, you know, but for me, it is very much like, I don't quite know. And even when Neil had said yes to the play, I was like, oh, I don't quite know what I wrote though. like, you know, I just know I need like another actor who's really great, who will also get in the ass of the script, but I don't quite know what this is. So a lot of the process was being, you know, was trusting Patricia and trusting that she'll also do a lot of the work as far as like, this is what I see. And we can sort of, and even Daniel, this is what I see. And we can kind of argue about that through the doing of it. So a lot of this was process oriented and not like product, like this is what it is. Even like our first production meeting before we started rehearsal, they had a different set. And I was like, oh yeah, I don't think it's any of this. You know what I mean? I think actually it's an art, you know, he has to be stripped of all things. So I think we have too many props for him. You know what I mean? Or we have too many set pieces for him. And so Daniel was like, what happened to my punching bag? I said, what punching bag? What happened to that prop? We did a week of rehearsal. He had one prop. And I was like, yeah, we have to get rid of that prop.
Stripped. Stripped of everything.
He has too much stuff. Just acting. Just him. Just
devastated.
So it was a lot of trying things and being like, no, I don't think that that's it. So it's like, let's go all the way far and trust that we can take it away. And though it will be devastating, like we can recover, you know? So it was a lot of that.
Daniel, what did Patricia sort of, you know, because even though you guys are in two different plays, I felt tonally, there was a real consistency and continuity. I felt like you were both were very much in the same world. And I think so much of what a director does is let us know what the tone is and help us find our way so that we live in the same world together.
Yeah.
Even if our pieces are separate, you know, this is you have a monologue and he has a monologue, basically. How did Patricia describe to you what she wanted the tone or the world of this piece to be, or the texture of it?
You know, I think it was still, a lot of it was still being figured out in time, mm-hmm. even through previews.
Yeah.
You know,
I think you actually saw a different ending than the opening.
Yeah.
I think we changed the ending days later after you saw it.
Yep.
So I get to come back.
Yes.
Easy peasy. Okay.
Yeah. You know, but it's just really what Ngoz was saying before about process. Like it really is, it was very much let it tell us what it is through the doing of it repeatedly to see what works and what doesn't work. And even things were like, here, do this. And then we'll do that for like 3 days. And then next thing you'll get comfortable with it. And she's like, okay, yeah, you don't do that anymore. And it's like, oh, but I'm comfortable with it. But it's like, yeah, but it doesn't work. So it doesn't fit with what, again, whatever this overall thing is that we're doing. Mm-hmm. But I think tonally, it's very much it's an inner dialogue that is happening outside. I think for a lot of people, that's what hits them is like, my thoughts are on display. That's what hit me when I first read it. I was like, I'm not doing this. I wasn't going to do it because all my thoughts were on display, you know, all of my feelings and emotions. And
wait, is that true? Was there a moment where you were like, thank you so much. This is beautiful. I can't wait to come see it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Day one.
He definitely tried. I never I didn't hear him at all. Like, I know he says that he was whatever, but I went to his apartment and I was like, hold on, he's the play. He's literally the play. So I think he was trying to tell me no, but I was not.
He's like, I have this friend who'd be so great in this part. And you were like, is that a euphemism for you?
Yeah, I was like, okay, great. I can't do Tina Turner. I can't do your play. And I go, why not? Yes, you can. You have to do my play. You have to.
Well, and now you're doing that. Now the thing that you were worried about, which is rehearsing one thing and doing this other thing, both of which are unbelievably all-consuming sorts of roles. How are you handling it?
Day by day. You know, it's,
I love that song.
You know, it's very ironic that I wrote an essay about, you know, taking my, you know, not coming back and doing the most, but I and I came back to do the most.
That was what it was about.
That's literally what it was about.
It was about coming back and not, say that again.
I was saying I did an essay for a backstage about, you know, before the pandemic, I was doing the most and I feel like I was on a runaway train. And I was like, what I'm not going to do when I come back from the pandemic is get on that runaway train again.
You're going to say no. You're going to say no.
And, you know, I will say the difference. I am doing better. The difference is like I'm definitely doing things that I care about. Mm-hmm. Whereas before I was often saying yes to things I did not care about. And though that was compiling, I was already exhausted and then piling things on top of that. I'm doing two things that I care about incredibly, which allows me to definitely say no to other things because I can't jeopardize either of these things. So that is the difference. It's still the most. Mm-hmm. It's just
it's the most.
I don't want to give something away, but you do something so intimate on stage. I haven't seen that before. If I did, I forgot.
I blocked it out.
I blocked it out. Or it just wasn't done as honestly as the way you do it. So there's a sexual act that happens in this play that is very real. And I want to know if that, you know, there are things that other people think, oh, that must be so scary. And that's not the thing that's scary for the actor.
Sure.
Where does that fit into your, I don't know, where is that on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of, I want to do this, I don't want to do this, or?
I didn't feel that I was going to be put on display in, you know, in a bad way. But also I don't remember when I adopted this, but yes, I do. I learned it during Whirl Inside a Loop, which is in theater specifically, we're kind of working on a thing and we're inviting people to come see what we're working on. Mm. If I had to go out to do it, I might have a different kind of feeling.
It was very real. That's what I want to say. And it was very brave. And I guess what I was asking before our technology was not a friend for a second is, was that scary for you or wasn't particularly scary?
No, it wasn't. I imagined it to be. I definitely had projected all of the fear on top of it. That was like, I can't, this is, my mom's coming. I can't do things, you know. Yeah. And again, once you see the piece, how far we've already I never know the proper way to say this word. Mm. Dived, dove in. What is the?
Dived?
Dived?
Mm. Dived?
The depths we've gone.
There you go.
You swam in very deep waters.
Swam in deep waters.
Yes.
Need to see, welcome.
Right.
I'm sorry. All I'm thinking of is your mom seeing the play. I don't even know what you're saying right
Absolutely.
Now. But I'm sure you're saying words that are English and sure. I probably can hear them. Exactly.
The things like the depth in which we've already gone, it actually makes sense to go there. Like it doesn't, it's not out of left field. It's like, this is very natural.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, and everyone might not want to admit that, and that's fine, but we all know the truth.
Yeah. Ngozi, you have written such unbelievably real people. And I know that sounds like such a silly thing to say, but there are times where you watch something and you feel like these are dimensions of people that I know. But there was something about this play that almost felt like documentary, like I was watching a documentary of two humans expose themselves and share. I was reminded of a private moment exercise we used to have to do in acting class that you would dread. And then afterwards you'd feel like so happy that you kind of really went for it. That's how I really felt watching you in particular in that first piece. You have to come out by yourself to an empty stage. You know, it's very bare bones. I love the kind of bare bonesness of this production. It isn't super proppy. I know it's hard when they stripped you away of all those things, Daniel, and we're like, no, you're each going to have a bed and, you know, you're going to have a pill and you're going to have a playbill, right? Like that's sort of it. But it was really thrilling. And I felt really honored to be in a space where you were doing that kind of work, which felt so private in public. And it was truly a privilege to be there. And you are really I'm talking to one of the greatest writers of our generation, and it's
say it again.
Oh, goodness.
For the people in the back.
It's just I have chills and it's thrilling, and I really encourage everyone who can to go see this piece. It will live in other theaters and other places. You've also written something that's so producible. Right? Like no matter what budget a theater has, whether it's a school or a Broadway stage, it's so doable. Mm-hmm. It's just about these people without all the bells and whistles. And it is why we go to the theater, right? To see humanity exposed and explored in this way. And it truly is a love letter to the arts and a love letter to the struggle. And it was so layered in texture from what will be the history of this time in the world. You know, this podcast, this will live forever, this conversation. We are talking in such a specific time, you know, and it is of this moment, but it will be relevant in all moments. And so I thank you for it. And the two of you together, like getting to see you together now, when the movie of this is made, I feel like I'm casting you in this thing together. Like you couldn't be, I'm mad it's a podcast. I'll try to use some of this on YouTube because you're so gorgeous. It's like looking into the sun. It's a lot. It's a lot to take in. Is there anything you guys want to share or say about what this experience has been for you? I keep talking about the privilege it's been for me, but we have a few more minutes before it's time to go. If there's anything you want to share, please, the mic is yours.
I'm going to say it.
Oh, goodness.
No, I do. Another thing that I really, really love about this piece is that it is, for a lot of people, it is their first performance since the shutdown. And I do think that it is a very, I love that Ngozi has given us this very raw, very real, very artistic piece as a barometer. Like this is what we're starting here. As I say, the come forward. I don't like to say the comeback. We're not coming back after this pandemic, we're coming forward. And you know, this is what we're doing. This is what's being done. And, you know, I am grateful that you'll be a part of it, but I do think that it will help shift how people look at art and for the long term. You know, different kind of artists for everybody. You know, everything can't be like this, but I do think that we deserve and need more stuff like this play. So come on, get your medicine.
I think for me, it's just been really hard and really fun, actually. I love theater. I love it. I have a love-hate relationship with it. More love than hate. And it's been really great being in a room with people that I like a lot and watching them grow and expand and writhe and challenge themselves the way that I'm challenging myself. So it's always exciting and scary, but really beautiful to go, oh, I think it's these people. Like, I think I'm going to do this journey with these people. I think that these are the right people. Because even when you've worked with people before or when you've seen them perform, you're like, you're taking a risk, you know? You're sharing a lot. My plays are always very personal, especially this one. And so you're taking a risk to be like, hey, I'm giving you my heart. Don't stop on it, guys. You know, and you do that in rehearsal with the director, you do that with the fellow actors, and you do that with the audience, being like, this is what I'm giving you. Please don't disrespect it. You know. And the reception has been really kind and lovely, but also it's been really an honor to watch Patricia even expand and grow as a director. Like, to watch her really be like, what, like, I didn't even know I wrote that. Like, yep. Did you add that? No, I wrote that. Okay. Yeah. You know, it's been an honor to watch, you know, Daniel, who I've been a fan of for a while, and we've been like periphery friends, right? Like, oh, you're a cool artist. I know you. You're cool. And I'm like, oh, I know you now. You know, and vice versa. Like, you know me. Yeah. This is, you're in my play. You know me. And so, you know, I very much do this to sort of like remind myself that I'm not alone. And I'm trying to share it to remind also other people that they're not alone.
Okay, I make everybody do this. You have to share a little known fact about yourself with me for the Little Known Facts podcast to end the episode. It could be I hate bananas to something very deep. It could be any kind of
little known fact about me that they all now know. I have a really intense online shopping addiction.
there are support groups for that.
I'm not ready yet.
So, you don't want to let go yet. So that's too good.
Every show, there is a really cute outfit.
I'm trying to remember what I said last time. little known fact is that I used to be a gummy bear junkie. Like, junkie. I had a bag of gummy bears in a drawer beside my bed that I would dig into in the middle of the night and just eat gummy bears. It was a problem.
Is this adult, Daniel, or young person?
I think I demolished it around like 4 years ago. Oh. Like, because I was like, this is a problem. It was a problem. Middle of the night. That was definitely high school me. Maybe college me. Okay. College me a little bit. But yeah, definitely middle of the night, just gummy bears.
All right, you guys. I want you to have time to rest before your show. We're sending gummy bears over to the theater and an Amazon gift card. You guys, thank you for your beautiful talents. Thank you for being on the podcast today. Have a great show tonight. Everyone, go see The Last of the Love Letters. These are two of the most beautiful artists you will ever get to be in close proximity to. It's an intimate, beautiful theater, but all the safety precautions are in place. So you will be safe and you will be moved and inspired. I wish you both a beautiful show. And thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having us, Anna. Good to see you.
Bye, guys. Have fun.
One more thing. So many of you have asked, how do you donate to the podcast? Well, it could not be easier. Just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Instructions are clearly laid out, and I'm so grateful to you in advance for any donation you choose to make. But regardless, I have loved making the previous 200 and something episodes for you. I can't wait to make 200 more. I wish you a beautiful day. Stay healthy, be safe. Until next time.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So, there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
The episode was edited by Nicholas Klar. We recorded in New York City. And the Little Known Facts theme song was written and recorded by Georgia Famusa with backups by Caleb Famusa.